kids from. On the other hand, drag performers and their allies pointed out during the bill's committee hearing that kids are more likely to be harmed by gun violence or sexual abuse perpetrated by church members. Senator Royce West of Dallas was the only Democrat to approve Senate Bill 1601. Democratic Senator Juan Chuy Hinosa of McAllen voted in support of the measure from the Senate floor, but later said he actually opposes it and will be switching his vote. For the rest of the story, please go to texastribune.org. This is Steve Gallington of the People's News, which can be heard on Sundays at noon, Mondays at 9 a.m., and Thursdays at 9 a.m. on 90.1 KPFT HD2, Houston's community radio.
You miss your woman, and I miss my man too.
Hey everybody, this is Glenna Bell, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Oh, that very cool beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals 6 p.m. Wednesday, time for So What's Your Story? The only show in Houston devoted to storytelling, and you're going to find it only here on Houston's community station, KPFT HD1, 90.1 FM on the dial, and online at kpft.org. I'm Hank Rubicek, producer and lead host of this award-winning show, where each week we spotlight ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. Well, it's April, and we kicked it off the same way we always do, with April Fools. After doing just a little bit of research, I learned that the origin of this goofy day is murky at best. And there are no practical jokes that I can play on the air, but we can have some fun trying to fool you into believing a tall tale or two. You know, a good tall tale is prompted by a trace of truth, rendering it somewhat plausible, at least in part. But when you get down to it, it's just a lie. And I got a few of those curious stories today, and they are told by really good liars. In fact, Warren Holloman, former co-host on this show, did win the Houston Storytellers Liars Contest with a story that is still talk of the town, and you're going to hear it in a few minutes. And Michael Winters, recent second place recipient at the Liars Contest at the Texas Storytelling Festival, will convey his creative prevarication, if you will. And you're going to love that one. It's also a few years ago. I'm kind of trepidation about saying this, but I took third place at our Houston Storytellers Liars Contest. I know that my competitors were two chipmunks and a squirrel, but nevertheless, I thought it was pretty fun. And if we've got time, I'm going to spin that one a little bit. So today's storytellers are two gents who are my dear friends and both have helped to cement So What's Your Story into the community icon that it is. What makes their stories even more fun? If they are genuinely the most honest people I know. I label them the impossible imposters. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Yeah. You sound so excited about being here, but thank you so much. You guys are busy. Warren is retired and busier than he was when he works. And Michael Winters is a therapist and he's sitting there thinking he's nuts, but it's okay. I'm glad I took a break, but thank you guys for being here. Michael, Dr. Winters, let's kick it off with you. You are a family therapist and you're president of the Houston Storytellers Guild. And
that's right.
This story, I have to be relentlessly honest with you. If I think about people's personality, you're not the one I think about as someone who'd get up and tell an unbelievable lie. You know, I just want you to know that because you're such a truthful guy. Well, I remember this. I remember
maybe you don't
the
know me
story.
as well as I think you do, Hank, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, you know, okay. Well, in the meantime, to give everybody an example, you know, you were up at the Moth. You told the story about the fact that your first marriage was short, really short. What was it, 9 months? Right?
9 weeks, Hank.
Nine weeks. Yeah. Even worse than I thought. And then you said, what's really weird is that I'm a family therapist. So I loved that honesty and openness. And now you're going to lie to us. Let's hear the story.
Well, you know, I was moving from Memphis to Houston, and I thought this isn't a big deal, right? They're both big Southern cities. And then there's, you know, the old song, T for Texas, T for Tennessee. So I thought this won't be that big a deal. But after I was here for just a few months, I recognized it was a big deal. It was very different. And I developed a joke that is amazing. And I brought it out at a party. There was a moment where everyone was silent. And I said, why do they call it Texas barbecue? To distinguish from the real thing. Now, I was pretty new to Texas and to Houston, and that joke didn't go over so well. It might have gone over like some of you are sitting at home thinking now, oh my gosh, who is this guy? So I realized it was time for me to leave the party. And as I'm leaving, I hear a voice from behind me. So you think Texas barbecue is a joke, do you? I turn around and there's this man, and he has a meat cleaver in one hand and a butcher knife in the other hand. Well, I'm not going to mess with this guy. He says, get in my car. I have no idea who this is, but as the evening wore on, I started thinking this guy must be the ghost of Texas barbecue, past, present, and future. He drives me into this, you know, far out of the town of Houston. We drive up to this small town, and there's this, looks like a restaurant. It's closed. It's like 2 in the morning now. And I said, I think they're closed. He told me there's always something on the smoker here. Get in. So we go in, and he says, sit down. And he goes back and brings out this platter of meat. It must be 10 pounds of meat. There's pork ribs and beef ribs, and there's barbecued emu, and there's sausage, turkey sausage, chicken sausage, pheasant sausage. There's even barbecued tofu. No, not really. There's not really any barbecued tofu, but there's a lot of meat. And I look at it, and it does smell delicious. And I pick up one piece of a rib, and I just look at it, I hold it up above my mouth, and I just shake it just a tiny bit, and it falls into my mouth. And I am just overwhelmed with flavor. And I say what I think is to myself, oh, am I in heaven? But I must have said it out loud, because the ghost of barbecue says, nope, even better, you're in Texas. So I'm enjoying all of this meat. I'm just enjoying it. He's not eating any of it. He's just giving it to me. And he starts telling me about Texas barbecue. And he tells me of Franklin Gatlin Snow III, the greatest pit master ever lived. And he has this idea. He's going to elevate the art of Texas barbecue. He gets a side of beef, an entire side of beef. And he's going to cook it extremely slowly for 2 years. He's just going to smoke for 2 years. So, you know, like a year and a half into this experiment, what happens is he has this guy that works for him, Bubba Bob. And Bubba Bob didn't realize that was the smoker that he wasn't supposed to open. And he opens it, and he's overwhelmed. And everybody is around, you know, they run over and close the smoker, and then they start attending to Billy Bob. And Billy Bob, you know, he's not in a good way. All he can do for about 2 years is lick his lips and giggle. Now, Billy Bob fortunately did eventually recover, but he's no longer allowed to work in food service. Now, what happened was the leftovers in that experiment, it was failed because it didn't go 2 years, it only did a year and a half. But basically all that was left in that smoker were a few bone fragments and the smoke had already gone. Well, they take the bone fragments up to a museum in Fort Worth. And they thought that was going to be good because there were lines outside the door of the museum. But what they realized after a few months was, first of all, nobody was going to any of the other exhibits. And secondly, they had to invest a lot more in janitorial support because everybody just stood there and drooled, and there were just piles of drool everywhere they had to mop up. So they took those bone fragments. You know, there's also a piece of this that there might have been some government concern about this because this was really powerful. So they take this. This is top secret. You can't tell anybody about this. Okay. You can't really pretend this isn't on the radio because you can't tell anybody. But they take these bone fragments to Roswell, New Mexico. Now, you may have heard some about Roswell, New Mexico. See, because what happened was these bone fragments became like an international, not international, intergalactic beacon of barbecue truth spread throughout the universe. And so you have all of these aliens that are coming from light years away. I mean, these are advanced civilizations, but they get to the New Mexico desert and they crash. See, they get overwhelmed by that barbecue. They're not used to Texas barbecue. It's too powerful for them, even though they've traveled for light years. Once they get here, they can't stand it. It crashes. So I'm just amazed by this story, and I'm eating and eating and eating while he's telling me this and a lot of other stories. And then I noticed there's one thing left on the platter. It looks like a bird. And as I notice it more closely, it's barbecued crow. And it was delicious. Well, you know, the next thing I know, I'm waking up in my bed and I'm like, oh no, was this a dream? But then I notice at the corner of my lip, there's a little speck of barbecue sauce. I lick it and am in pure bliss.
All right. Okay. You know, you just know all the listeners are listening and saying, ooh, you know, when you talked about that criticism of Texas barbecue. I love it. Now, this is sort of a serious question in some ways, because every once in a while we get notes from listeners. And, you know, Warren, you know this from your time of being a co-host, and both you guys have been guests multiple times over. Sometimes, you know, I get questions, and one question that I get are things like, well, okay, you talk about lies and tall tales, and you talk about getting an element of truth, right? And you have to start someplace. There has to be a seed. So tell us, what is the seed of truth that prompted the story?
Well, I moved from Memphis to Houston, and in fact, I told that joke, and it got the same response. you know, it was people were not, you know, Warren knows this. He grew up eating Carolina barbecue, which is, right. You yes. know, in Tennessee, barbecue is pulled pork.
Right.
And it's got a vinegar-based sauce. And that's just what barbecue is. And so coming to Texas, and then they're barbecuing all these strange animals, and they have this, you know, red based sauce and all this kind of stuff. And I was maybe a little homesick. And so that was, you know, what I told, and again, thinking it was hilarious and then not getting the reaction that I thought I would. So I, you know, that was just a memory that I had. And then when I found out, oh, well, tall tales start out with something that's plausible, something that's true. And then right. It just moves beyond that. So
if I were to say, yeah, I was raised on Cleveland, Ohio barbecue, that would be an absolute lie, right? Well, you know that would be a ridiculous lie,
right.
And not even an element of truth, right? So I see what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now everybody
yes.
from
right.
the Midwest is
right. I went to Indiana, went to Purdue for a while, and went up there, and there was a restaurant, and they said barbecue. I thought, oh, okay, barbecue. Well, I should have known not to even try it because the barbecue sauce was Hunt's ketchup. That was what passes for barbecue
sauce. Yeah, how yummy. Yes.
Yeah.
And having gone to Purdue as well, as you know, that's probably putting it kindly, right?
Hunt's ketchup. Not exactly known for their barbecue.
Right, not at all. Well, you know, it's interesting because we're really talking about April Fool's Day in a way, you know, going by way of these wonderful lies. And April Fool's may be the day of the jokester, but, you know, April is a month of woe, calamity, misfortune, trouble, despair. I think I covered enough descriptors to make the point. And the events in April, historically speaking, are no joke. I want everybody to check this out. These are the things that happen in the month of the joke, right? Here are events. The Lincoln assassination, let's just start with that. I know that a lot of, you know, millennials were saying Lincoln was assassinated, but nevertheless, okay. Then we've got, now they're all pissed off at me, right? All the millennials. Okay, the great San Francisco earthquake. The sinking of the Titanic. There's a good one for you. The Ludlow massacre, the striking coal miners in Colorado. The Hillsborough disaster, that's the overcrowding of the Hillsborough Stadium in Sheffield, England. 96 people were stampeded to death. The siege at Waco, the Oklahoma City bombing. Excuse me. This is my favorite. Hitler's birthday. Columbine. The Virginia Tech shooting. The Notre Dame Cathedral fire. The Boston Marathon bombing. Let's not forget about tax day. But again, the best day of my life is in April. I hope my wife is listening. It is our anniversary, right? So what can I say? April is not a fun month at all, as history would point to. You guys may or may not be able to answer this, but Warren, what was the best trick that you ever played on someone or someone ever played on you?
Well, in terms of played on me, the one that I have to say is the one that I fell for about 5 or 6 years in a row on April Fool's morning. When our kids were old enough to figure out how to take some tape and tape in the kitchen sink, there's the faucet, but then there's a sprayer that's associated with that. And they did that trick where you tape the handle of the sprayer so that's in the on position. And then when I was first one down, and I would turn on the water to get a glass of water. And every April Fool's morning at about 6:30, I sprayed myself with water. And I fell for that at least 5 or 6 years in a row.
Okay. Okay. The water spraying joke. All right. Michael, what about you?
I think, again, it would have to be done to me. And in graduate school, I had a group of folks that there was one ringleader, but he liked practical jokes. So one time I came back from vacation and they had moved my desk, everything on the desk, just exactly like it was, but it was down on a stage in an auditorium. So it wasn't in its usual place, but it was there. So I saw it and I just went up and started to work and didn't give them the satisfaction of eventually, I guess we moved it back. But I remembered it was a good one.
Yeah. You guys are so tame. You're so tame, right? You're so nice. You know that everybody thinks you're nice, but these pranks really prove it. Now, mine took place in middle school, junior high, as we would call it. And that tells you immediately that we did something to someone else, because, you know, junior high kids are reckless and ruthless. And we had a substitute, and it was the same substitute all the time. He was a nice enough guy, but the substitute, Mr. Bidwell was his name, had a hearing aid, which he adjusted, you know, based on sound, right? So if he couldn't hear anything, he turned it up. Right. Remember the old kind? So he was a substitute. One day, the teacher was ill, and a bunch of us decided to play a joke on Mr. Bidwell. It was very mean. So I want everybody out there to know that I was 13 years old. I just want everybody to know this. I was 13. Okay. So Mr. Bidwell was asking a question and we all decided that we'd whisper. So we're going, I'm mouthing the words right now. Right. And maybe we'd crank it up a little bit. And with each answer, he'd turn up the hearing aid because he couldn't hear until after about four or five times, one of us would yell out, Mr. Bidwell, you know, and of course he'd grab his head and his head was about to explode. It was really sad. It was terrible. It was probably a criminal activity, but that's what we did in junior high to Mr. Bidwell. If I had any regrets in my life, that might be the top one. I don't know. It might very well be. Okay. Now, Warren, tell us the elements of truth, no matter how trite, that was included in your story. Because there's a little bit of, you know, little elements of things that obviously happened to you or are true in your story. What were they?
Well, my story is going to be about a hound dog and about a man who accidentally goes in the wrong restroom. So the ladies' restroom. Mm-hmm. And the elements of truth are that from the time I was about 3 or 4 years old, I had a hound dog, a beagle. Our neighbor raised beagles and he was afflicted with polio. In order to help him out, my parents would take all of his, each time he'd have a litter of beagles, they would take some of the beagles. So I'm very familiar from early childhood with hound dogs and have a great love for them. So my story is about a hound dog. The other element of truth is that this story is about a man who accidentally goes in the ladies' restroom. And my home state of North Carolina passed some legislation about maybe 8 years ago called the bathroom bill, which made it illegal for a man to go into a ladies' restroom. And it was basically a way of persecuting trans people in the state. Mm-hmm. And so even though this is a humorous story, it has a very serious concern that kind of prompted me to think about this issue. Right. So there is that element of truth in the background. And then the state of Texas, you may recall, some of our leaders thought that was bathroom bill was a good idea. And they tried to pass one through the Texas state legislature and failed. Good news is more recently, North Carolina has revoked the bathroom bill. So it's no longer a felony in the state of North or misdemeanor. I don't know what it was, but a serious crime for a man to go into a ladies' restroom. The only other thing I'd say is that when I was just entering puberty, so that would be what, about 23 years old? No. I remember our family was riding a ferry out to the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and I had to go to the bathroom before the boat took off. So I ran back to the shore, ran into the bathroom, and ran right into a woman who was coming out. And that was a very terrifying moment for me as a 13-year-old or so. And of course, that woman was on the ferry, and I had kept seeing her over and over for the next 2 hours. And so So that's the other element of truth.
I appreciate that. I wanted to ask you because your story is, for lack of another word, a little more complex as far as the sorts of things that went into it, as mine or Michael's or many others. And you know, it always reminds me of one of my favorite quotations, which I've said many times, from Mark Twain, and that is, show me someone who knows what's funny, and I'll show you someone who knows what isn't. So your story, in my opinion, is exactly that. It's funny, but it has a very serious topspin. Let's hear it.
Sure. Whew. Well, I'm going to tell you about the time, Hank and Michael, I'm going to tell you about the time I went possum hunting with my dog all night long. That was his name, All Night Long. I thought that was a pretty good name for a hound dog. We got down in the woods one night. It was sometime after midnight. I'm not exactly sure, but up come this terrible, terrible storm. And so we hightailed it back to the truck. And if it's